Make sure you are in fellowship and continue on here. We are dealing now, or getting into, the section, verses 8 through 10, that cite the historical precedent of Thebes. Again, which was conquered by Assyria, so would have been in the Assyrian consciousness. And the force of all of this, of course, is that strategic advantages in wartime don't help if God's the one fighting against you. It doesn't make any difference how well fortified you are. It doesn't make any difference how well prepared you are. It doesn't make any difference how strategically you're located. If God is against you, he can bring you down. And this is seen repeatedly in the scriptures. Egypt was essentially under the 12th dynasty at the height of its power, as you moved into that 13th dynasty when the Exodus occurred. So Egypt was no mean nation, but God devastated them as he chose to. You have the example, both historic and prophetic example, of Edom, who was strategically located in a place very difficult to get to and very hard to conquer. But if God's against you, it doesn't make any difference. All advantages become disadvantages if God's against you. No advantage will help you. So are you better than no Amon? Again, which is historical Thebes, the one dwelling which was situated on the banks of the Nile. Again, I just changed the waters to banks, the idea here. With water surrounding her. And whose rampart was the sea. Again, we looked at that. That's a defensive barrier. A bulwark or a rampart was the Yam, is the Hebrew term for sea. Y-A-M. And essentially, the question becomes, of course, one of the interpretive questions, is he saying that that arm of the Red Sea that extends there into your map would form a natural barrier to anyone just coming across Arabia and moving into Egypt? Is that what he's getting at? Or is he using sea in a different sense? Is he referring, most often when the term sea is used, now here it does not have the definite article, but most often when it's used, it refers to the Mediterranean. But arguing for the Mediterranean as a barrier for Thebes hardly seems valid, because it's way further south than Memphis is. So whose defensive barrier was the sea? From the sea. And then you have whose wall consisted of the sea, literally from the sea, a wall, her wall. You got the word coma, which just means that wall, C-H-O-M-A-H, means wall, or in this case, of course, it's a defensive barrier. Point one, Nahum now takes up another taunt against the city of Nineveh by drawing to an attention to an event. By drawing the attention, rather, to an event that must have occurred in the fairly recent past. Two, as pointed out in the introduction to this book, the sacking of Thebes would lose some of its force as one moved further away from the time this event occurred. Three, since it is amply attested that the fall of Thebes occurred in 664 to 663 B.C., this reference indicates that the event should be fresh in the mind of the readers. Again, this is why we arrive at a tentative date of 661 down to even maybe 654 BC. Because there were certain events in Assyrian history, as Assyria is presented in this book as a strong imperialistic nation, essentially at the zenith of its power. And they began to get into some problems circa 650 B.C. They had the rebellion there in Babylon. The younger brother rebelled against the actual king of Assyria at that time, who was residing in Nineveh. And he summarily went down there and put down the rebellion and killed him. So Nahum now turns the readers to consider the destruction of a city that enjoyed the benefits of being well fortified and had the geographic benefit of a strategic location. Five, the initial rhetorical question implies that the city of Nineveh is not any better than Noamon, and will fare no better when it is faced with its coming invasion. So again, why cite this if it's not really germane, if it's not within the consciousness? I mean, and it's scary, as far the farther you moved away in time from this, would eventually, you know, the example would lose its force. Six, the question should not be understood in terms of moral or political superiority. Seven, or pardon me, the question in this context stresses the advantage of strategic location. Seven, Noamon is the Egyptian word for city of Ammon, which is more commonly known today by its Greek name, Thebes. The Greeks called it Dios Polis, the divine city, while the Egyptians called it the southern city, or sometimes it was so well known, in fact, it was referred to as the city. They didn't even use any other, they would just call it the city. It was that well known. Eight, as the name indicates, the city is named for the Egyptian god Amon, Amun, both same thing, they just different vowel pointing, who also later known as Amon-Ra. Amon was originally the Egyptian god of the reproductive forces, and Amon-Ra means the father of the gods. Nine, the city became the great capital of southern Egypt, which is, if you read about Egypt, you will see it called Upper Egypt, and was located about 400 miles south of Cairo. The modern cities of Karnak and Luxor are actually built upon the remains of Thebes. So if you're looking at a modern map, if you see Luxor there, you will know you're in the right area. 10, Thebes was prominent in Egyptian history, having records that extend back to the beginning of Egyptian history. Tombs dating from the 6th dynasty have been found in the necropolis, which is located on the west side of the Nile. The necropolis there, of course, was essentially their cemetery. That's where they buried their dead. 11, the city became the center of one of the most magnificent ancient civilizations in the world. Homer speaks of it being renowned for its 100 gates, and a temple measuring 330 by 170 feet, and its network of extensive canals. 12, Thebes emerged as the administrative center of a line of powerful pharaohs, and always served as the capital of Upper Egypt, and often was the capital of the unified Upper and Lower Egypt. And that would alternate sometimes back and forth between Thebes and Memphis, Memphis being the preferred capital in the north or in Lower Egypt. So 13, the city was built on the eastern bank of the Nile, but eventually suburbs spread to both shores of the river. 14, its splendor is witnessed by what remains until this day. Its temples and palaces are said to have no equal in antiquity, and the place is called the mightiest ruins of all ancient civilizations. That comes out of Amerding there and his commentary on Nahum. 15, the city is described in our verse as being situated on the banks of the Nile River with water surrounding her. 16, the Hebrew term Ya'or refers to a river or stream that forms a definite channel through a territory. It is used 64 times in the Old Testament, and 47 of those usages are translated Nile. So often when you see that term Nile, you're just seeing this word when you see it in the English translation. 17, the plural here is to be understood as referring to a series of moats, canals, and other waterways in and around Thebes. 18, the next statement about the fact that it was surrounded by waters has caused some to suggest that this is a reference to the annual inundation of the Nile. As a part of Egyptian culture, they recognized that the Nile River flooded yearly. And when it did flood, and it came out of its banks, this was important because it was partially important to the economy of Egypt. This was a big deal in their cycle of planting and harvesting and all that. But I don't think that's what he's referring to, because, one, that's just typically it's just an annual event. It is not something that occurred on a real frequent basis. 19, however, it is highly unlikely that this is what is in view. More likely, Nahum is referring to the system of moats, canals, and channels that essentially surrounded the city. And 20, while this system of waterways that extend off the Nile, it should be that, would be helpful during times when the Nile flooded, because they could obviously control the water flow with these things by diverting some of the floodwaters and not have the city be flooded. They would also form a natural source of permanent protection. 21, although some have suggested that Nahum have never seen thieves. And of course, this is nothing more than an argument from science, because we don't know what Nahum had seen. And to make assumptions like this demonstrates a real lack of intellectual honesty. To just, you know, that he can't know about Thebes because he's never been there. Well, how do you know he's never been there? Again, the book of Nahum is, in some ways, as we saw in the introduction to this book, difficult in that we don't know where Nahum was from. We don't know if he lived in if he had been deported and lived in Assyria. We don't know if he was in... My best guess was that he lived somewhere in Judah. But he could have lived in been part of the northern kingdom that survived the deportation. We don't really know. So again, you have to recognize sometimes when you're reading certain things that, you know, ask yourself, can this be proven? And arguments from silence are just exactly that. They're not worth anything because you can't prove it. So although some have suggested that Nahum had never seen Thebes and is thus exaggerating, their criticisms are without merit. 22, the Nile is relatively wide at this point, about a half a mile wide, and divided into four channels by three islands. Further, the Karnak Channel on the right bank and the Fadilia Channel on the left flank the city. 23, additionally, there are remains of other channels, which must be considered in the description of Thebes. So 24, the reality is that the city at that time was literally situated on the waters, which formed one of the best natural defenses available. Clearly, I mean, and you're on the Nile too, so it's not like you can bring an armada down the Nile. I mean, you could get some ships in there, likely, but you're not going to be able to bring an army down through there. And so you're going to have a difficult time getting at Thebes. That's the whole point of all of this. And in a similar fashion, it's not to be lost, Nineveh was situated such that it had some natural watery defenses. As we saw there, the Kosar River flows through it. The junction of the Tigris and the Kosar are right there very close together. And there's another river that actually flows in that region. So the similarities here, of course, should not be missed when he talks about Thebes and he talks about Nineveh. 25, the next statement Nahum makes is that the city of Noamon had a rampart that was formed by the sea. And 26, that the statement is not to be interpreted as a literal sea is obvious, since Thebes was not in close proximity to any seas. The only argument you could make is that, well, he's talking about the Red Sea forming sort of a natural defensive barrier to the east of Thebes. And that may be to which he's referring, but that is still some distance away. So it appears to me that, as we'll see here, 27, it is the general consensus of interpreters that the sea is a term used for the Nile itself. In other passages in the Old Testament, the Euphrates is called a sea. Isaiah 27:1, for instance. So it's not unprecedented for this term to be applied to a river, while we would probably not do that. You really only have here about three options. And so you just have to, in some ways, of course, if you eliminate that which you know it can't be, then you are probably closer to arriving at the truth. Isaiah 27:1, in that day the Lord will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent, with his fierce and great and mighty sword, even Leviathan, the twisted serpent, and he will kill the dragon who lives in the sea. And most interpreters here recognize the sea to be referring to the Euphrates River. Also, Jeremiah 51:36. Therefore, thus says the Lord, behold, I am going to plead your case and exact full vengeance for you, and I will dry up her sea and make her fountain dry. And again, when interpreting this in terms of prophetic Babylon, one must have the isagogics of historical Babylon in view, at least, to form the background for why he uses Babylon. And in that case, Babylon was situated right on the river Euphrates. So there it's called a sea. Clearly, God's not going to dry up the literal sea. I mean, are we talking the Atlantic, the Pacific, the Mediterranean? I mean, drying up seas is, well, it's possible for God, but from a human perspective, that's just out of the question. Well, 28, alternately, the term may be referring to a very large lake that was constructed by Amenhotep III. This was in the 18th dynasty, which was about 1,000 feet long, wide rather, and over a mile long. 29, the lake was surrounded by a large embankment, which was erected to contain the waters. And this achievement formed another barrier to those that would attack Thebes. And so they had, the whole idea here is there was enough watery protection around Thebes that it shouldn't have been taken very easily. And yet, the fact is, it was taken. 30, the Hebrew noun kale, which is translated as rampart there in Nahum, whose rampart was the sea, refers to the smaller outer wall that formed the first line of defense, with the larger inner wall forming the primary defense of the city. And 31, the final statement of verse 8 is simply a summary of the fact that the waters that literally surrounded Thebes formed a wall, a defensive barrier that made the city appear to be quite safe from attack. And 32, although Sennacherib had exalted the city of Nineveh with words that boasted of the fact that the city was stable and practically eternal, the rhetorical question here is designed to point out that if Noamon fell, in spite of its remarkable position and natural defenses, then Nineveh could not expect to escape, that this was going to not save them. So again, whatever one might rely on for protection won't save you if God wants you. And this is why, of course, as a believer, you can walk around and feel safe and be safe wherever you are. Because if God's for you, who can be against you? And if God's against you, that's the whole point, nobody can be for you, not effectively for you. And so I'm every bit as safe as I am when I'm in my house, as when I'm in an airplane, as that when I'm driving around. I mean, all things being equal, the positive believer enjoys a great deal of protection, and I'm sure some of it is angelic that we don't even see or are not even aware of. That angelic protection must be around us at all times. We see that a lot in the life of Christ. I mean, you see that with the angels ministering to him on particular occasions. All right, now verse 9. So continuing here, this taunt, another taunt here, pointing out that Nineveh is not going to escape any more than Thebes escaped. And again, Ethiopia was her might, and Egypt too, without limits. Put and Lubim were among her helpers. The proper name here, Cush, refers to the historic kingdom of Ethiopia. Ethiopia was her might. Feminine singular noun construct with the third feminine singular. And again, the reason these cities are always referred to as feminine is the Hebrew term for city is feminine. So, the feminine singular noun of Otsem. O-T-S-E-M. That means strength or might. There is a textual issue here. Alternately, they have suggested that this might be a feminine noun, Atzma. But it doesn't materially change the interpretation here or the understanding of it. It's essentially saying that they had military support from Ethiopia. And some of these countries, particularly around the northern African region, were often allies. They had nothing to gain at some levels by fighting each other. And so very often they helped one another. And Egypt, too. You got the proper name here, Mitzrayim. M-I-T-S-R-A-Y. I am. Mitzrayim and that A-Y-I-M ending there, that is a dual ending. And Mitzrayim itself, the name is dual because from earliest times, I mean ancient history has, there was always some level, an upper and a lower Egypt. Now no doubt Lower Egypt was settled first as they came out of the flood and the Tower of Babel. But it did not take them long, apparently, to establish Upper Egypt. So that's why you have that ending there. And Egypt, too, without limits. Egypt without limits, and is a wow here, and there does not exist Ayin, A-Y-I-N, there does not exist Quetzal and N. Q-E-T-S-A-H. Quetzal. An end, a limit, or a termination. Now the next proper noun is put. Now that one becomes a little more difficult. P-U-T. And they just transliterate it over into the English. We really don't know exactly where that's at, but if you had a modern map, and I don't know if some of you have maps in your Bibles that have Egypt on there, or even Africa. I don't think mine has that broken down that much. But if you do look on a map, modern map, we probably guess it's around Somalia. It could even refer to a place there that's across that branch of the Red Sea. Would refer to, yeah, I've got a map, but it doesn't show. So it doesn't have the modern countries on it. So again, it might refer to an area across the Red Sea there where Yemen is located. And all the game that ran late last night, they had a funny sketch opening Saturday Night Live with the Yemeni ambassador. About why we're going to give them millions and millions of dollars to end terrorism. So again, Somalia, probably if it's on the west side of the Red Sea there, or Yemen if it's on the other side. And Luvim, the proper name here, L-U-V-H, Luv actually. And that equals Libya. That we do know. And you can see obviously there are sometimes you can tell what some of these things are, because even in the root letters, they'll carry over into the English translation. So that one we do know, it refers to Libya, which of course borders Egypt there on the west. Literally, they were among her helpers. You got the cal perfect, they became, haya, the verb to become, they became with her, a support, literally. You got the feminine singular noun construct here of Ezra. E-Z-R-A-H. Ezra, a helper or a support. This word's very often used in a military context, so the idea here is military support. So she not only had the advantage, one of the things, the argument here is, Thebes had the advantage of strategic location, but Thebes also had the advantages of great allies. Assyria is not going to have that. That part they're going to be missing. Yet she became an exile. She went into captivity. And yet is the conjunction here, gam, also, indeed, or even. And the idea here is even so. Yeah, given the fact that all this is true. Even so, she became an exile. The pronoun here, he, for an exile. You supply the idea, supply the to be verb, you have to, it's not in the text here. You have the preposition lamed, the inseparable preposition, plus the definite article, plus the word gola. G-O-L-A-H. And gola, that feminine singular noun, means deportation or exile. So it's also used to refer to those that are deported, and so you would translate it exiles. But in this case, it's a singular, so the idea is she went into exile. Or actually, you do have a discrete verb, I'm sorry. She walked into exile. You got the cal perfect there of halak. She walked or she went into exile. She went into captivity. The verb probably would appear to govern both of this. She became an exile, and she walked into captivity. She walked as halak, again, the verb to walk, and then the inseparable preposition bait plus shavi. S-A-T-B-H-I-Y. Shavi means captivity or those taken into captivity, and so sometimes it's translated by the term prisoners. Also, again, conjunction gam, also, or indeed, or even, and even so. given her great position, given her great allies, her small children were dashed to pieces at the head of every street. You got the conjunction gam there, and then the masculine plural noun construct with the third feminine singular of olal.
O-L-A-L.
That word is used 20 times, and it just means a child or an infant. It's pretty hard to place kind of what they have in view here in terms of age, but this would appear to refer, by the translation in the New American Standard reflects it, to smaller children. That essentially you could grab by the leg and just bash them into a wall and slaughter them to bits. And the Assyrians did this. So this is not an overstatement here. They were guilty of this. So her small children were smashed. Ratash, and this is only used, R-A-T-A-S-H, only used 6 times, and it means that, to smash something into pieces. And that was the preferred way for killing small children. They didn't bother with a sword or anything else. They just grab them up by the arm or leg and bash them. They didn't even have to bash them into a wall. They could just bash them on the ground. But it was gruesome. It was gory, but it happened. And her small children were dashed to pieces. Again, the pu'al, imperfect, here would refer to repeated action. And this is one of the beauties of the Hebrew languages. The imperfect here refers to repeated action as you see each small child being picked up and slaughtered. Nahum wants to get their attention here. Dashed to pieces at the head of every street. Again, the pu'al also is intensive passive stem. So to smash into pieces has the idea of slaughtering. At the head is the inseparable preposition bait plus the word rosh, R-O-S-H. And that word means exactly that, at the head. The idea here would be the places where streets converge, the more public squares. At the head of all outside, literally. All of is the masculine singular noun construct of kol, and then the masculine plural noun of kutz, which means literally that which is on the outside, C-H-U-T-S. And so it's very often translated by the term streets. At the head of every street, of all streets, literally. It's not a singular, it's a plural. So they were doing this in public places, very public places, and doing it for a purpose. They wanted everybody to see it. They were sending a message. They cast lots for her honorable men. You got the preposition, you got a wow here, plus the preposition ale, on, upon, or over. And over, or for, or even on behalf of here, of kaved is her heavy ones. And this word, it means heavy, weighty in the sense to be of substance, to be honorable or noble. And so they've translated as honorable men here. And then you have the cal perfect, third masculine plural, of yadad. Y-A-D-H, A-D-H, and that word is only used 3 times, and it means they cast lots or they gambled. They threw dice, essentially, to see who was going to get the honorable man. Because they were just going to take him and make him a slave anyway. It's not like they were going to do anything great with him. But these are the chief people in the city. And they cast lots for her honorable men, and all her great men were bound with fetters. And they gambled, I left out a word here, is a goral. That's the masculine singular noun. They cast a lot, G-O-R-A-L. That word means a lot or a portion. The stones used to throw when they were casting lots, they didn't use dice like we do. But it was a similar idea. You know, they would take a series of stones or twigs or pebbles and cast them, and the outcome was determined by that throw. So they gambled for her honorable men. And this, of course, was the invading army, the victorious soldiers, would divvy up the spoils first. And then, you know, whatever was left over would go down to the more common guys in the military. And all her great men were bound with fetters. And is a wow, and then you've got the masculine singular noun construct of kol, all, each, or every. All of, and then the masculine plural adjective construct plus a third feminine singular suffix of gadol. G-A-D-H-O-L, her great ones. Again, her celebrities, her dignitaries, any of the honorable military men that would have been left over that weren't killed in the siege, in the battles. These are the types of people they would have. So all her great men were bound as a pool perfect. Again, the intensive passive used out here of Rathach. R-A-T-H-A-Q. Rathach is only used two times. Again, it means to bind somebody with chains. And they've translated here with fetters, bonds of any kind. And then with, you have the inseparable preposition bait, plus the definite article, plus the masculine plural noun of zek. Z-E-Q. Which again is only used five times. And Nahum uses some rather unique vocabulary inside this book. In addition to his superb writing style, his ability to rhyme, to use assonance, he uses just about every literary form and device in this book that you can use. Okay, well, we have to stop early today, so we'll just stop right there. There's no point in trying to dive into the exposition of this. And I will get you out the rest of the notes for the chapter here, but it is our month to observe the Lord's table, so let's get everything in place before that.